Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cultural Colchester podcast. I'm Tim Young and I've got another fantastic guest with me today. She is the talent development producer at the Mercury Theatre and she is... Dilek Latif. Hello, Dilek.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you.
Now, let's go straight in at the deep end.
Let's do it.
Talent development producer. What does that mean? What is your job? What do you do?
What is my job? It is what it says on the tin, but I look after the artistic, along with Ryan, our creative director, the artistic development program at the Mercury. And our aim is to nurture artists in the East and beyond, but mainly in the East to start off with, and to really get their work out, get their voices out and hearing them roar and, you know, take over the world.
Absolutely.
In the future.
That's our ambition.
Yeah,
Colchester.
Definitely.
And do they come to you or do you have to go out and find them?
I think it's a bit of both. So obviously, you know, we've just curated a program of Mercury playwrights, Mercury directors, Mercury producers. So we'll either put a call out for people. And then, you know, we go out and we watch people's shows, we read scripts, we go to festivals, we look, you know, it's my job to stay on the ground and see what's happening and what's occurring, really. So it's a bit of both.
So, that sounds like a wonderful job.
It is a wonderful job.
So you work with our further education college and schools and...
Yeah, I'm in the creative engagement team. So I'm the talent development producer and I work alongside my peer, Matthew Dewson, my peers, I should say, Matthew Dewson and Forrest Morgan, who are the creative engagement producer. And Forrest is the coordinator and looks after schools as well. So we work together because a lot of things overlap. So Matt and Forrest specifically look at schools. Mm-hmm. And when there is that overlap with artistic development, then mm-hmm. I come in and help nurture that artist as much as we can.
So what other avenues are there to tap into local talent? And you say it's not just Colchester, it is the Eastern region and beyond. So where are your touch points with because there's so much talent out there.
Yeah,
this is what we found through the podcast.
Yeah, I think there's so much talent out there. I think a lot of it is talking to other venues as well. But, you know, to make sure that we don't just stay exclusive. A lot of it is on the ground, you know, where there's festivals, there's the Ink, there's Spill, there's, you know, High Tides Festival, going across to Southend and seeing what's going on there, looking at the Essex region, going all the way up to Bury St Edmunds. And it's just always staying on the ground. And I think once you start incorporating yourself on the ground, then people tend to network and enable those contacts to happen, if that makes sense. I think it's the biggest thing is being as visible as possible with your offer. And so it is going around town if we've got an artistic development opportunity. And it is, sending across to various gatekeepers in various communities and in the East and artistic communities in the East as well to spread the word.
So here we are. We are actually sitting in the new revamped, Steve Mannix tells me, £11 million. Mercury Theatre. It is absolutely wonderful and we hope people are going to flock back here. I've interviewed Ryan, Tracy, Steve and now you, which is, I think, proves how central the Mercury Theatre is to culture and arts in Colchester. Is the new theatre going to be helpful for your job as well, do you think?
Yes, definitely. I think having a revamp spaces to have a creative learning space, especially for those elements, those classes, and to be able to offer community the space to come in and either, you know, do your 101 acting course for fun, or to come in and do a how-to class on, for example, the next one in July is how to write for beginners of playwrights. So it's definitely provided this central space rather than, I think, previously there was a separate space away from the building. And it's, it's just this, there's this feel about putting the community in the centre of the building, and that's what we're really excited about. And within that, you know, the artists flourish as well. It's all about ownership, I think. And yeah, I mean, look at the building. It's just gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It's amazing. And we would encourage everybody to come to the Mercury. I know you're all going to come and see, and see productions anyway, but it would be just a place where you can hang out, have a coffee, and really, it's the vibe here is absolutely brilliant. Let's talk a bit about, well, I was going to say about Forrest. Forrest is a very talented guy. And he's in a production that I'm going to see. I don't know when this will go out, so I'll either have seen it or I'm going to see it.
Yeah, I was about to say it, actually.
At the Headgate.
Yes.
And it's just a two-hander. I'm really, he's a really talented actor as well, isn't he?
He's amazing, yeah. He is more skilled, is Mr. Morgan. He is amazing. And it's a real privilege to be in the team with him. And I think as the creative engagement team, we really do complement each other. I work with two people who are East born and bred, I think. And I've come in from the Southeast. And, you know, I've now been here for 4 years. So it's cool.
Time flies.
Yeah. But, you know, we complement, our knowledge complements each other really well. And it's lovely working with Forrest. Forrest especially looks after our SEND work. And we're particularly proud of that. And it's, I think we all of us in our team, as well as our new head of creative engagement, Laura Norman, who's absolutely amazing. But we like to be able to be in a team that shares that same vision about putting the community in the centre of the building and going out there and making our offers visible and going for it and being talented and acting at the same time as well.
Yeah. So the SEND work, is that special educational needs?
Yes. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Engage with that because there are so many people with so many talents.
Just because they
have special educational needs. Doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah, our offer has to be accessible for all, and there is no, exclusions here, and we work really hard for that. And that's for artists, that's for young people and elders as well. So it's really, really exciting times, and we've upped our offers as well. We've now got dance. As well as our Aspire Club nights that are coming back in, so I just love it.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, it really is exciting.
And the studio,
yes,
all your colleagues have told me, is going to be for new local work mainly.
Yeah. So I look after programming this studio, and the bar as well, as artistic development, whatever we could fill on that contract. I'm joking. I really love it. I'm so excited. So the studio announcement is coming. Just give us a few weeks, but we're nearly there with regards to a fully programmed studio, and it'll be the first time the studio is fully programmed. And the works, you're looking at majority of East based artists, and I say East, not specifically Colchester, but specifically East, and that's really exciting to have the talent shine through there, and just to be able to own it. I think it's very interesting that we have artists are like either Southern or Northern, aren't they? And I just want to start East. We're East Essex.
Well, that's Essex born and bred. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you said, and in charge, so we're going to have some stuff in the bar as well.
Yeah, we've announced our new venture, which is our Mercury Lates, which is, to start off with, it will be once a week in the bar, and it will be a late event. And when we talk late, we're talking about 9:30.
That's late for me, am I?
Exactly. And it's going to be a mixture of cabaret, spoken word, jazz. We've got a silent disco. We've got a murder mystery coming up.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and that's all going to kick off with the Femmes. So that's a local band.
Excellent.
And they are amazing with a brilliant 40s night, I believe. So it's, yeah, just looking forward to that. And really? Again, the Lates is really packed full of local artists. So for instance, we've got we've given a residency, we're calling it Together. We came together to call it Cocktail Cabaret, which is a residency for a local LGBTQ+ collective to come together and brilliant. To use the space to grow, to show and to flourish, really. So they'll be with us once a month, and they will be, hosted by our local drag king and queen. So it'll be amazing.
Oh,
just looking forward to that.
This is going to be so
fun. It's going to be buzzing. I'm
it's
actually
be
like,
absolutely
really.
Buzzing. Now, you mentioned, if I may get a bit into your background and how you got to the Mercury. You say you're from the southeast. So where, what is your background?
Today? So I was born in Lewisham. I always say that. I was born in Lewisham, but probably brought up in Sidcup, which is a lovely sleepy town, but with probably the most amount of artists and the least amount of knowledge that there are those artists there with Birds and Rose Bruford. And I went off to study law. I was a lawyer.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Okay, where did you study law?
I studied law at the University of West of England in Bristol.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Bristol's a lovely city, isn't it?
Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah. It's so gorgeous. It's kind of like the same vibe that Colchester's got, actually.
Yeah.
Just
so
thriving.
You have good memories of Bristol.
Yeah. It's like a second home. Yeah. Well, those memories are a bit shady, but... I always say if I can do law, anyone can.
You trained as a lawyer and you ended up as the talent development producer at the Mercury Theatre.
That's a perfect route.
Take us along that journey.
Well, I think I should have sussed it from my options at law school that I was always taking the socio subjects like civil justice, penology, looking at rehabilitation and at reparation and why is this happening, and really questioning the system rather than going along with it. Civil liberties, I was interested in, how do we protect certain underrepresented communities. And kind of, I think I should assess that I was really a people person. And then going into law, I rose to being a litigation manager and getting the papers ready for court and stuff. And it just felt like a bit of a hamster in the wheel, really. The higher up you got, the less you saw of clients, basically.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And it was
and
one
that's
of
not
that. No, I don't think so. So I just did this weird thing. One Friday, I got up and handed in my notice and just begged for them not to let me change my mind because it was just the moment of madness.
Yeah.
So they were lovely. They put me on gardening leave so that I had time to go suss out what I wanted to do.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And then within those that couple of months, I got a scholarship to drama school. So went to drama school.
Where was drama school?
So I did a little bit at Rose Bruford, but then did most of my drama school in Wapping called, it used to be the Academy, but it was called ActWorks.
Right.
Mainly focusing on Spoleen, which is improv.
Yeah.
A
bit of improv.
Yeah, love it. And then just got out of that, worked as an actor for a bit, and then I think I realised I like to be in control of things, so started putting shows on myself. And put on my first Fringe show at the Broccoli Jack.
Yeah,
The Awakening by Julian Garner.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Again, questioning social morality, really. And then, I came out of that, and then there was a post for a producer placement with Tamasha. An arts council, and it was a regional placement, and I applied, got through to the first round. The first round, I was actually in New York. So I remember Skyping, the interview was Skyped with Tracy.
Just on holiday in New York.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
And so I was like, oh, I'm in New York. So I had that as Skype, yeah. And then I was asked to be re-interviewed by Mercury and Coventry. So my first interview was at Mercury, and the next day it was Coventry.
Coventry, the Belgrade.
Belgrade. And decided, I think both decided that the Mercury was the one.
Good.
So I was here for 30 months with a remit. So because it was via Tamash, so the remit was on ethnic diversity and diversifying and looking at how does that happen. How can that happen? So I spent a good while looking at that, and obviously as a result produced Silence and Ain't Misbehaving. And then, yeah, when the placement was up, they asked me to stay and be this brand amazing name. So,
can I rewind just a bit?
Yeah.
Because so you made this decision, this momentous decision to stop being a lawyer and move into trying to be an actor or going to drama.
Yeah.
What did family and close friends think when you made that moment?
Well, I mean, my parents, I think they were, it's not the done thing. It's not for a Turkish kid to leave anything. I think it was the equivalent of going off to join the circus. but it was such a snap decision. Like, there were no conversations. So I think they were very supportive quietly because they were just trying to suss out what had just happened, because I literally had rung on a Friday and went, I've quit. And so it was like, okay. And then I think, you know, it takes a while. It's a very different feel with being second generation and some the aspirations and not understanding that there are careers in theatre, because actually those careers are not visible.
No,
so
absolutely.
why would your first generation parent think you'd be safe in this industry?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I think a lot of people don't understand how many jobs and crafts and roles make up a theatre.
Definitely.
It's not
definitely.
Just actors and producers and directors, is it?
No.
It's craftspeople and all
takes
sorts.
A village. Takes
Absolutely.
A village.
Absolutely. I don't know how many people the Mercury employed, are you?
I'm not sure.
It's,
you know,
dozens.
It's
it?
Yeah. It's quite high.
And for every production, you get in freelancers as well.
Yeah. So that's why Panto feels like the family. Like the family, yeah. Because it's just that feel in the, and there's so many people. But yeah, and I think that was part of my realization when I was, you know, working in the early days, is, you know, not targeting, I don't know what the term is, it's like low-hanging fruit. You have to go out, you have to show that your role is visible, you have to show that there is a journey beyond the stage, in front or back or side, do you know what I mean? And I think that's your duty. And yeah, we do it with aplomb, I think. We've done really well as a result. We got the, we even got an award.
You did get an award. Tell us about the award.
Well, the Excellence in Inclusivity, we got that from
well
UK Theatre.
Yeah.
But that was really like, that was a team effort, and that was us really, I think it's very easy to be defensive, but if you want to move forward, you have to be transparent. And I think you have to go, we're not there yet, but actually we're going to start, and we mean business and statement of intent.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. You know, being defensive, you can blink and it's 20 years and nothing's happened. You have to go, okay, this is where we're at, and this is where we're going to go. And that's us as a team, really. And we really did speak about it. And there were some really transparent conversations that we had, and some observations. And it's always great having new people come in and go, really? Looking at the makeup of Colchester and going, actually, our stage has to be reflective of the makeup of Colchester. And I think the easiest way that I always say is like 11 a.m., Saturday in the park, that is Colchester, mm-hmm. Or the bus Very stops, I would say, but that is, that's your makeup.
Yeah.
And that those are the audience that you want in, and those are that is the makeup that you want on stage as well.
Yeah, that I think you're absolutely right, but very, so is the award on your shelf at home?
No, it's not me. It's not me. It's all of us. It's Mercury Theatre.
You didn't grab it, like, you know. I'll have the BAFTA. I'll just take it home.
Grab it. No. It's actually on our shelf in the office.
It's
on
display.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful and rich.
Yeah, we're really chuffed with it. But we also, you know, as we made a statement that we're not done. And we're not perfect, and we will keep going. It was really nice to go, you know, in front of the theatre industry. That, you know, if we can start from where we start from and go there, you know, everyone can as well. You know, the future has to be inclusive and transparent. I think that's what it's got to be.
Absolutely. You know, I must admit, and I'll hold my hands up, when I was putting the guest list together that I wanted for this podcast, and I've had a little bit of criticism on social media about it, is I have interviewed a lot of white men, I have to say. So I said to my partner, Nikki, we've got to get some women, and we've got to get some people of colour. And that's not ticking any boxes or being tokenistic about it.
That's right.
But have you found in this industry that has have been any obstacles because you're a young woman of Turkish descent?
I think...
Or is the theatre industry more open? That's my impression.
Well, I think there's like an intersectionality. I can see where it's tough. I have to understand... I'm now coming from a place of privilege because I work in-house in a theatre.
Yeah.
However, I can see how as a freelancer, as an actor or actress of colour, how tough it is, just purely on the casting decisions, on the programming decisions. And I can also see how tough it is for people who are ethnically diverse. Or the new phrase that I like is the global majority.
That's a really good phrase.
How why would you engage in theatre if it's not engaging with you? So it's I can see that question, and I understand it, and that's what I hope to feed back into the programme that we do it at the studio. It's not easy to be Turkish sometimes. I mean. Specifically because people want answers from you, and it's like, well, why would I know what an Asian person's journey is like? And it's because this misunderstanding. I'm from Lewisham, I keep saying, but I think it's on all of us to look at unconscious bias, and it's really hard, I think, because there is this defense, and I think. The story, we just got to look at making sure that the story and looking at it does not come back on you you defending. The story is there is simply not enough representation, so fix it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's there's no need for a defence. There's no need for you to feel like bad or whatever. Fix it. Like, now's the time. Like, it's far too tiring, I'm sure. You know, my exec team have been here a lot longer in the industry, you know, and the time has got to come where I'm just going, like, you know, I don't want to blink in 20 years time and we're still sitting on diversity panels.
Absolutely.
When it's just obvious. No, do you know what I mean? It's not rocket science.
Absolutely. In my defense, some of those white men I've interviewed are gay white men. I'm trying to, you know.
Yeah, well, diversity hits all branches, doesn't it? It's all the branches
and
intersectional as well.
We talked about the BAFTAs, which I watched the other night, the telly BAFTAs. Did you see them?
No, I didn't.
And it was interesting. And I don't know if BAFTA have made a conscious decision. I'm sure it's all about the talent of the programme. Michaela Cole won at least three or four.
Yeah.
Reikia Iola won an award. And these are just great talent. talented people, and we have got to, you know, forget about it. And there's been a lot of colorblind productions coming in. I think that's the phrase that we can use. If we can't, then I put my hands up. But Bridgerton, I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, but I think there's now like two cases to it. I think unconscious bias training. I think it's up to you to do your training, but it's not up to you to kind of flashpoint that training. For example, I'm going to do colorblind casting or look at Bridgerton or whatever. That should be the norm. It's up to us to understand that that should be the norm. And if we are swinging one way, as some people state, for example, and having an all black cast, but how many hundreds of years have we had an all white cast?
Exactly.
So that's by the by, and it's a production decision, and that's it.
Yeah.
But you know why and how and whatever, that should be your training behind doors, I think, because then it becomes tokenistic if you're you start saying, I think.
Exactly.
But
I hold my hands up because I come from a council. 51.
He's holding his hands up.
I am literally holding my hands up. 51 councillors on Colchester Borough Council, and we've only got one councillor who's of colour, a Malaysian called Councillor Helen Chua, who's brilliant councillor. We haven't got enough women, and it doesn't reflect Colchester.
Yeah.
Colchester Borough Council councillors, and I sit here as a 60-year-old white man, and we need people to come forward, to put themselves forward for election,
yeah,
and better reflect the community of Colchester.
Yeah, well, then I would say that your offer has to be visible and that space has to be open to them. I think the table, you can invite someone to the party, but you actually have to prepare that seat for them. Yeah,
and that's for the political parties to deliver. That's not necessarily for the council. The political parties have to go out there and find people in the community because they're there who better reflect.
Yeah, and I think in various communities and aspects, politics and in the arts industry as well, like there is this certain dictating with regards to form of things, like who dictates what excellence is, who's dictating how council sessions are held and stuff, why they're held and stuff. So there's a lot of heavy doorkeeping, and it's that kind of needs to be dismantled a little bit and really looked at and going, who is dictating these rules? And it is the system a lot of the time. Let's go smash it.
Exactly. Smash it down. It's the same in the House of Commons still, although the House of Commons is getting better. The House of Commons is better than Colchester Borough Council in terms of ethnic diversity.
Yeah.
And there are more gay men and lesbians there now than there's ever been. But it's still not good enough. Still isn't good enough. We're getting quite, you know, it's a serious issue. And I really wanted to explore that with you, but let's go a bit lighter.
Okay,
let's go into your favorite things, which is a running theme in my podcast where we do a quick fire. I ask you your certain favorite things and you tell me what they are.
Ooh,
first thing that comes into your head.
Okay,
all right,
okay,
you ready?
All right, I think
favorite play.
Oh, Bold Pony.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, favorite film.
Oh,
we're gonna get it all before everyone.
Oh no!
Favorite film at this precise moment.
Oh, at this precise moment, what do I keep watching? Moana.
Brilliant bit of Disney. Book.
I've read so many plays. I haven't read a book in a while. Something by Orhan Pamuk.
Oh, okay. Is that a male or a female?
Male.
Okay, I'll have to check him out.
My Name is Red, I think.
Okay. TV show?
TV show. The Thick of It.
I would appreciate that. That's a great shout. Favourite actor and or actress?
Oh, you can't do this to me.
I've done it to everybody else.
Just specifically at this moment for what they bring to the stage, I would say local actress Anne O'Diki.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Essex. She's amazing. Yeah.
Will I have seen her in anything? Or is she someone who's coming to the
ministry? She was in Misfits at Hornchurch.
Okay.
She's done some facilitating for us for the Hear Me Now monologues, but and she's currently working on a project. So you might be seeing her in the autumn, but she's amazing.
When this goes out, we'll tag Anne.
Yeah.
And then she can listen to it and get your endorsement.
Yeah.
Favourite song?
So, because I was the only Turkish in a convent school, it has to be Shine, Jesus, Shine, because he's just amazing.
I love Shine, Jesus, Shine.
Yeah, I know, and it's just quite an oxymoron. Really
I went to a convent school when I was a little kid. And they built a Roman Catholic primary school, and so I moved on from the convent. Well, I might have to investigate that more with you later. A favourite holiday destination? Is it Turkey?
No, because we're a family from Northern Cyprus.
Oh, Northern Cyprus. Oh,
careful,
right.
The uncle's Turkeys. No, it's...
We won't get into Cypriot politics. That's more complicated than British politics.
Yeah, especially a second gen. I would probably say, aside from going back home to Northern Cyprus, I would probably say Key West. It's pretty cool.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I love Key
West. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never been.
You should go.
Must go, yeah. Persuade my partner.
Yeah.
Favourite other person with the name Dilek?
Do you know what? There's an actress called Dilek, and I've forgotten her surname, but I do know her because she went to the Old Vic, and she's brilliant. But do you know what the surname? Because I have foggy brain.
So if we put into our search engine Dilek Old Vic, she might come up.
Yeah, okay, Bristol Old Vic.
Yeah, we'll do that. And that's for everybody's homework from this podcast. Is to find out her.
Yeah, Dilek's quite a common name.
yeah. You were telling me that before the interview. That it's kind of
like a Sarah.
Sarah. Yeah. favorite thing about the new Mercury?
The space and this untapped opportunity.
Yeah.
I would say this like. Yeah, just
I bet
buzzing.
You can't wait for the public to come now.
I just can't wait. I'm just like, please.
When's opening day?
We are, the 26th
dependent on
June.
Government advice and guidelines. But
yeah, 26th
what's
of June. 26th of June.
Fingers crossed around everybody.
That weekend we're open.
Excellent. And it is wonderful.
It is amazing. It is amazing. And it's just, I think we want to share it because it's not our building, it's everyone's. So we want the community back in.
Absolutely. Favourite animal?
Favourite animal? Hedgehog.
Why do you love hedgehogs?
Because I describe myself as a bit of a hedgehog sometimes.
Do you? Yeah. Do people buy you furry hedgehogs?
Yeah, oh, goat. Oh, my goodness. Goat. Work would not allow it. Goats, I've got 9 goat teddy bears bought for me. but goats are so naughty and they just do what they want. Yeah. So I really like it.
Yeah, that's why you can relate to them.
A little bit.
And last one is favourite meal.
Favourite meal? Well,
sausage roll.
Yeah, I do like a chicken nugget. But I'll have to end it on the. I'm that classy. I'll end it on chicken nuggets.
Fantastic. Right. Well, let's go back into this. We've got something in common then. Convent school.
Convent school.
You were taught by nuns?
I was taught by nuns. Yeah.
I was taught by nuns.
First Turkish kid in the convent.
We're getting
school.
A connection here.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah.
So what? How was that for you? I might share
that. I mean, I think they took an affinity for me. I was a very, I don't know how you call me, like a bit scrappy. I was a defender for everyone. So I was always in the room to defend someone.
Excellent.
And they were just like, Dilek, what are we going to do with you? And I was like, it's not right. They've got a right to reply. I didn't even understand it. But what I would say is I was at a particularly great convent school in the fact that, yes, I got desensitized by religion. However, I respected it by the end because I think, I was the first Turkish in. And I was fasting for Ramadan when I was little. I was particularly religious.
Yeah.
And they didn't know, they didn't understand Ramadan. Their sisters had pulled me aside and questioned why I wasn't eating at lunch and thought it was an eating disorder, bless them. And as soon as I explained it, I'll never forget that they took me to, we had a chapel. I mean, how can you not? They took me to the chapel and they said, this is your place. It's not Jesus. It's not, it's your place. So if you need to break your fast here, and I was like, thanks, but no, but yeah. But if you ever need anything, if you ever need to sit down and pray or whatever, this is your space. And I think that's, I don't think I've met a sister of the, like, of the Catholic faith who has been anything but kind and, you know.
Yeah, because you hear some horror stories, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I think I was pretty lucky.
A lot of people made a lot of money writing about it.
But then, you know, there are other sides. It was an all-girls school. It was very Daisy Pulls It Off. it was very Jolly Hockey Sticks. Excellent. And I didn't understand. I'd got into this school, I think, midway through I'd got offered an assisted place. So I'd got one of those. So I was very... Yeah, I'd seen both worlds. So going into like Jolly Hockey Sticks land was very different. But what they did was they nurtured who you are. Yeah. I was very lucky that I got nurtured.
I must admit, my primary school days, I do look back on with fondness. I mean, that was still, I mean, this was in the 60s. So
yeah,
there was a bit of corporal punishment.
I mean, our Latin teacher was still into that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, why are we learning Latin?
I must admit, the nuns and... I represent Greenstead, and we've got a community of nuns on Greenstead called the Canonesses of the Holy Sepulchre, and they do such great work in the
community. It's just amazing.
Lovely people.
It's all about missionaries, isn't it? It's all about absolutely giving back and stuff. Absolutely. And I think that's what I learned, what from what I saw, and obviously it's all subjective, isn't it? But what I saw was that it is mankind that makes religion bad. Like, if other than that, it is all about loving your neighbour and
absolutely
looking out for each other.
Yeah. Not a bad rule of life.
No, not at all. But yeah, it was very fun. I got blessed a lot.
Yeah,
I used to say, like, in Mass, you go up for the, God, I've forgotten it. Oh, my goodness. That's it. You go up for the communion. I was like, I'm not Catholic. And they're like, it's okay. It's
okay.
You can have a blessing instead. And he blessed me. Bless you, my child.
You've been blessed so many times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We did all the prayers, you know, all the prayers in French, German, Latin. But yeah.
Yeah, we did all that.
It was fun.
Let's come full circle and back, just to finish off, because time goes so quickly during these interviews.
Yeah, been bubbling.
And to Colchester.
Colchester.
And why do you think Colchester attracts this? Why is it a creative hub? Why Colchester? I've had a number of theories propounded over the podcast interview. What's your take on it, Dylan?
Why is it a creative hub? Do you know what? I think because we're in the mid, I feel like we're in the middle of Essex and the East, like they're almost a pathway.
So it's part of its geography.
I think part of its geography. I think we are close to London. I think that rubs off on us. The culture that we're able to go in and come back and shout about. But I think it's increasingly so with the opportunities that are open here. Mm-hmm. Artists have more freedom to breathe and really work on their work and their style. But it's vibrant, and we are a young growing town. So it's the age there.
I think for Britain's oldest recorded town to be a young growing town as well.
I think so.
I think you're right.
I think in the stats.
We are one of the fastest growing towns in the country.
And also when we went in the carnival, when you walk carnival and you see everyone there, it's a young town going, actually, we want to do it this way.
We've got great history and a bright future.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's that. And I think it's a town that has grown from people, from spearheaders making their history. So you've kind of got this... Yeah, I'll Boudicca it, or I can do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got this platform, this like empowerment. You've got Mole Flanders. You've got everyone, like great characters coming from this town, and that empowerment and arts institutions, the Institute, the University, Colchester Arts, First Sight, everyone just coming and going for it and going, let's do this. And I think that's great. And it leads to more opportunity.
Absolutely. And your next steps?
My next episode.
You've got a brand new theatre too, yeah.
My next episode, it's all about the studio season at the moment.
Yeah,
and producing our first Mercury original in the studio, which is Kenny Emson's Sirens. And it's all about making sure that we make this ladder of progression for talent development visible and with enough opportunities. We want people to grow, to go into the studio, to be a Mercury original, to go into the main house, to go out and tour and take over. So my next steps is to continue that work behind the scenes and program the best we can in the studio.
What a great place to leave it. Dilek, that has been so wonderful. We've covered a lot of ground.
I know, right?
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
And join us again for the next edition of the Cultural Colchester podcast.